Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and I am Ted Santos. I am your host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every single Thursday. And we come to you to talk about your business challenges, your business goals, objectives. What are the things that are really keeping you up at night? And we even add some other flavor, like your health, and the future. We've had some very interesting guests, and tonight I will say this will be our most special, exciting, and valuable guest that we've had on this show. And before I introduce our guest, I like to always, as always, I never fly this journey alone. I always have a co-host. And Lori, let them know you're in the house.
So, hi, it's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design, and Ted, you are far too kind. I do believe that you are probably the most exciting guest, but thank you, and I love our show, and I think it's really helpful.
I think so, too, because the show has been really good. So, it's been really good for people who are especially in this COVID time, right? So they're dealing with, you know, my company is shutting down, laying off, or they're just keeping us at home because they don't want anyone to get sick. So, you know, people are questioning, what do I do with my life? What do I get my own business? Do I develop some new skills? And, you know, this maybe is a good time, and we've talked about people working from home and having more time to reflect, and how people may really get in touch with themselves in a way they haven't. And then on the flip side, they may get in touch with their spouse in a way they haven't, and that could create more intimacy. And sometimes they may want a divorce and say, "Oh my God, that's who I married," right? So,
right.
So from a business perspective, people are doing the same thing. They're re-looking at their business. You know, what are the things that we can do? And then we get to transformation, which gets us to our name, The Creative Alchemist, right? So
exactly.
You are the creative, and we're going to talk about that in a second,
alchemist.
And I am the alchemist, right?
Yep.
So,
and a perfect blending for those who are creative.
Right. So today, our guest, you normally introduce the guest. I get to introduce the guest today. So
you
today, ladies and gentlemen, under curtain number one is our honorable guest, Lori Miller. And I will be interviewing her. If any of you would like to call in and ask Lori some really challenging questions, because she has a very interesting background. I don't think really any of you know how interesting her background is. If you'd like to call in, the phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. And Lori, where are you from originally?
So I was brought up in Long Island, and from there, I guess I went out to California for a little bit and came back, and I was, I guess, in between jobs. I had left my job. I took a job out in California. I was working for Child Protective Services out there, and ironically, I was a painter as a kid and an artist. And then during college, I stopped, and that was actually my minor. So I stopped painting due to a really bad professor. And then I went out to LA and I started painting again. And then I came back to New York and I took a job in Rikers Island, as a young lass. I really had no idea what Rikers was. I was kind of isolated
for whatever reason, didn't have a clue. Wait a second. So there may be some people on the other side of the country or somewhere in the South, and they hear Rikers Island. That may sound like, you know, a paradise, a luxury place. What is
Rikers
Island?
It could be a luxury place.
I should say a vacation spa, a resort, right?
Right.
Some people may say, oh, that sounds like a resort.
That's true.
Some people may get a vacation there. But what is Rikers Island?
Well, we'll get to that in the next 5 seconds.
Okay.
So here I am, and I take a job at what I think is a hospital. And I'm like, okay, Rikers Island, right? I think it's a vacation resort. I think it's a hospital. I'm like, okay. And I get on a bus, and we go over a bridge, and I'm like, wow. I don't, like, this place, the hospital, I don't get it. And there's a million buildings, and it's very institutional. So, again, it looks like a hospital. And I'm like, what is this? Only to find out that it's the largest prison facility, kind of like Alcatraz, on an island. And it's not a long-term prison, so it's more of a holding detention facility. So it's really one of the worst places. There's no order. There's no rhyme or reason. You know, people are in there for years until their cases get heard in court. Or, you know, so we get from panhandling, you know, just kind of homeless on the street and they want to give someone shelter, to like a major mass murderer, a serial killer. So here I am at age 25.
Interesting.
Clueless. So,
you could say it's fair to say you naively walked into this saying, oh, I'm going to be working at a hospital. In what capacity were you supposed to be working in this hospital?
So I was hired as an HIV counselor. And I was one of the first HIV counselors in New York. There were, I believe, 8 of us or 9. From all boroughs of the city, and it was an exciting time. A gay men's health crisis had just started. There was all sorts of support services. Nobody knew what HIV was. I had been in a methadone clinic. People were dying at our doors. And we came to find out that it was HIV-related, and the meds were founded through one of the cancer centers because it was kind of one of those diseases where it was under, you know, a cancer thing. I don't know what you call it, the cancer specialties. So it was exciting. It was AZT. Nobody knew what it was. And they first had testing, kind of like now, right? We're on the brink of COVID. Nobody knows what it is. We just started doing testing. Now we're finding there's different strains. So it was pretty radical, and that was back in the early 90s, 1990, 1989, 87, 86. So I was hired as an HIV counselor, and I ended up going over to mental health, which was more along the lines of where my degree and specialties were. So after several years of working at Rikers, I then was running the mental health units. I was the director of crisis management, and it was a lot of fun. I have to say it was a huge learning experience. It was a lot of fun, and who would have ever thought that I liked being in jail?
So wait a second. So you were working in the mental health facility of a prison, of a short-term prison system?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, supposedly
short-term. Right. So please, you said from panhandling to mass murder. So I assume guys like the Son of Sam would have been locked in a facility like that for being a mass murderer years ago.
Correct.
And so people like him who could also, because he made a claim that his dog told him to kill women. So someone like him could have been under your, for lack of better words, jurisdiction in mental health facility.
Yep.
So
exactly.
you're dealing with people who are a threat to society and mentally unstable. It's not like they just had some bad things and, you know, uncomfortable situations as a child. They developed into dangerous people who were a threat to society. And you yeah. are working with these kinds of people. So you went from wanting to be a painter, an artist, to working with dangerous criminals who were mentally unstable.
Yes. And I thought that was a good idea.
Okay. And not you couldn't just this place wasn't easily accessible because a lot of people probably don't know Manhattan has a few islands
right.
around it. So you park your car somewhere and then you get on a bus and it drives you across a bridge to a prison facility with
right.
a bunch of buildings.
Yep.
Interesting. So it's not so easy to get out of that place unless you swim.
No,
out.
It's not easy to get into and it's not easy to get out of.
Interesting. Okay. And you worked at Rikers and at some point you felt like this isn't the place to be, so I'm going to get my get out of jail card and you left, right?
Sort of. So nothing I ever do is cut and dry or clear and easy. So
okay.
I actually took a job working for the Queens District Attorney's Office. And very cool, the CSI SVU TV show was based off of my unit, and
no
it was
kidding.
The Crime Victims Advocacy Unit, and I very excitingly got to work with Mariska Haggerty, and we worked very closely on crime victims and special victims unit and domestic violence. And it was just when sex trafficking was coming under fire, which
really?
Is a really
wow.
hot topic now, thank you to our politicians. So a lot of
right.
Sex trafficking crimes we dealt with through the Attorney General's office. That also was quite interesting. And while I had made that switch, I took a part-time job in a wallpaper and paint store. So I was doing my first house, and I had spent a year there looking for my own wallpaper, and both the owner of the store and myself decided it was a great idea if I worked part-time there, since at that point I knew every book and every manufacturer of wallpaper. So I made it my business. To really kind of know everything. And I loved it. It was a passion. It was fun. It was a break from the harsh realities that I was dealing with. And I mean, people came in and we spoke to them and we just had fun. You know, it wasn't real life. And I was dealing with real life. I was, you know, you can imagine.
Right. So Lori, the creative of Creative Alchemist, started out as a creative in art. And then you could say you reinvented yourself. So, right? So our first show was about transferable skills. It sounded like you changed your major and this is a whole new set of skills, and we'll get to how you came full circle.
Right.
Except what did you have to draw on to go from being an artist to working in mental health in a prison? Like did you have like a mentor to help you rethink your life? I mean, because that's a pretty big leap, right? I want to be an artist and then I'm working in mental health. So what was that transformation like? And what kind of skills do you think you took from art to being in mental health?
So I'm not sure I took any of the skills. I wish I could say that I did, except being intuitive, you know, trusting my gut. So mm-hmm. where I learned, I guess, how something feels when you look at it, you know, the emotional response, like the psychology of color is based on an emotional response. The psychology of light is based on an emotional response. Music is based on an emotional response that I took to my therapy. So in the course of going back to school and learning, it was also learning how to read people, communication. Is what they're saying jiving with what I'm seeing in body language? You know, does it feel true to me? So it was kind of pushing my head aside, for such a lack of a descriptive word, and going intuitive. Trusting my gut, trusting that instinct. And that, I think, is the only two things that I really see as a similarity or taking with me.
Okay. All right. So, and then working in mental health, that you are dealing with people and trusting your gut. You know, is this person, can they be made better, right? To be, or rehabilitated, if that's even considered.
Right.
I don't know if that's even part of what you look for.
Well, yes. Can they be rehabilitated? Can they make changes? Are they able to process? Are they intuitive? Can they go from topic to topic? Are they, you know, present when they're talking to you? Are they responding to internal stimuli or voices? Or, you know, are they talking to themselves? Are they genuinely talking to themselves, or are they faking it?
Okay. All right. And then you went back to the – so you worked for the DA's office, right? So not as harsh as Rikers Island, but that's still giving you some harsh reality. It was harder.
It was harder. It was harder than working in the prison system.
Why? That's counterintuitive.
So people who are arrested and committing crimes have a choice. They make a conscious decision what, you know, what they're doing. Do I want to rob this person? Do I not want to rob this person? Do I want to shoot this gun? Do I not want to shoot this gun? I mean, look, it's not every case, you know, but I would say 99.5%, they're conscious choices.
Wow.
So it's kind of like you have free will and you can make the changes to your behavior, or you can choose to come back. You can choose to get help with your substance abuse problem, or you don't. You can choose to take medications, or you don't. So, but in the crime victims program, they're commonly called victims, but we call them survivors. So if you're the victim of a homicide and you're not killed, you live with those ramifications daily. If you're a mother and you've lost your child because they've been killed, you live with that every day. And that's pain,
right?
And that's horrific. If you're a child who's being, you know, sexually abused or physically abused at home, and the things that we see and hear are horrific, you know, you don't have control over that. You know, you're 8, 9, 10 with someone who's abusing you that's 6 feet, 5 feet, has power, has whatever.
Right.
And
right.
Taking that home is horrific. So, and you don't, you know, it's that control piece. So going home at night, I was like, oh my God, I'm worried about this person. I had witness protection under me. I had every major crime under me. So it was just ginormous. And I couldn't do that for much longer. So I had to leave the position. And
wait,
me,
you were doing psychological evaluations of people in that capacity?
We were helping them through the court process and doing supportive counseling.
Okay.
And
right.
Processing,
right.
You know, for whatever witness protection we were processing, where are they going? What are they doing? Helping them go through it, helping them change their lives,
right.
Helping... So, you know, we were moving them from home to home. We, you know, we're doing whatever we could to protect to protect the survivor.
Right. Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So it was a lot. And I think it was at that time where I became aware of what someone's surroundings does to their mental health, to their psyche.
To shape them, right.
Correct. So if someone was raped and they had to go back home, we, you know, would try and help them get into a safe space. So that was always huge. If their house was broken into, it's no longer a safe space.
Right.
So
wow.
That was my first realization. So I left the DA's to do my business. so the interior design full-time. And I went back to work part-time in case I couldn't make it work.
And where did you work part-time?
At Rikers.
You went back to Rikers. Okay. So
I went back to Rikers.
So are you still working at Rikers?
I have not been at Rikers since March, starting with COVID.
Okay. But I guess you're still on the books for them.
Nope, I'm not. I'm on
pause.
No
kidding. Okay.
I am on pause.
So you have been working in prison. So, you know, someone calls you, you says, "Hi, I'm in jail," right? So I'm in jail. You work there part time. So okay, so you haven't worked there since COVID. And they're still locking people up, but I guess it's a risk to have you working there from being exposed to COVID.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing
COVID,
over there now. I can't comment. I understand that everyone's been let out and they're running the streets of Manhattan.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So you... And I live in Jersey. When I go to Manhattan, it kind of is starting to look like that a bit. It is. So,
I mean, look, we had a population of 32,000 when I was there, between 32 and 36,000, and I think they're down to 2,300. So where did all those people go?
You're kidding me. I thought that place only had like a capacity for like 18,000 people or something.
No.
They must have built it. Expanded.
Well, we had Rikers, and then we had the outlying borough houses, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens. So a lot of them were closed, but I don't want to get into the politics of Rikers. It's just frightening that everybody's out there. So.
Okay. So then you went back to work part-time at Rikers, which wasn't as harsh as the DA's office. And you decided the company you were working part-time doing wallpaper, you decided to hang a shingle on your place.
I did.
Become an entrepreneur. That's another leap. Art to mental health and now sort of a artist entrepreneur.
Yeah. So in between, I worked part-time for everybody else. My boss had sold the place. I went to work for a furniture company. I went to work for a carpet company. And then I worked for an interior design company. And then I started my own business. I said, you know what? I'm working for everybody else. I started the program. I knew the marketing. I knew how to network. I knew how to get out there. I can do my own business. And after starting my own business, I realized that I had not, you don't do it just to help people. You don't do it because you just want to make pretty and it seems like the thing to do because that doesn't make you money. That there's a lot of boundary issues. You have to do accounting. You have to deal with the IRS. You have to know if your bookkeeper is, pardon the language, but effing up. And I've been through all of those scenarios. I've let people take advantage. I've not had contracts. I didn't have things in order. And I really, through the, 20 plus years that I've been doing the interior design business, I learned that it wasn't as easy as it looked. And it wasn't like running a psych unit, and there wasn't protocols in place. And I knew that I needed something to help me navigate this business world that they so called it. So even though I did statistics, it wasn't accounting. And even though I helped people, it wasn't making money. And you have to account for your time, and you have to have boundaries, and you have to have procedures. And all of these things are hard, and if you don't have a background in it, you don't know, and you don't know what to do.
At that point,
I think you and I had met.
Right. So let's back up. So you started a business, interior design. Who is your target market? What does that really mean? You were doing, you had an interior design business. What, for those who don't know, what is that?
So what is an interior design business, or what's your target market?
Well, let's do interior. What is an interior design business? What is that?
So an interior, so there's two things. There's an interior decorator and interior designer. So we're often interchanged. An interior decorator is someone who comes in and does drapes and furniture. Sometimes they'll do what's called a space plan, where they'll lay out your furniture. They'll pick some paint colors for you. They do a rug, some light, you know, they'll throw some lamps or a chandelier, and they'll accessorize, right? They'll throw like a clock on a wall. They'll throw a picture, and they make, you know, things superficially pretty, and they leave. An interior designer goes to school. They learn how to move walls. They learn where things need to be placed. We have knowledge of codes and construction, of electrical. We know how to do a lighting plan. pardon me. We, you know, we know fire codes. We are knowledgeable in textiles and all sorts of different things. You know, there's just loads and loads of classes on codes and construction and on placement and how to move, how to, where to do furniture and how things lay out and kitchen planning and all kinds of, yeah. So the list is endless, but we renovate your home.
I was going to say, you have a better, a clear understanding of structural design, right? So someone may say, well, I want this. Yes, you may want that, but that goes against code, or this, because of the structure of your house, that may compromise the structure. This is the reason why that may look good. So let's have a different conversation about what you really want to do here, and I can help you get that same look without violating or compromising the structure of your home. So you're much more knowledgeable.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So there's a lot. So but there's still, an for you, there's an artistry. So you get to be, you get to, the word I'm thinking is design. Like, so there's a design to the structure of your home. And by you understanding the design, you understand the design of art. There's a way you structure a picture or a sculpture.
Exactly.
And you still get to be an artist. It sounds like you've gone back to being an artist.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So, and I'm going to say, people always talk about look for your passion, but it may not always look the way you expected it. So you took something that you were highly committed to, you really enjoyed it, and you sort of took a detour, and you came back, maybe you came back to it, and perhaps the most challenging way is you came back as an entrepreneur, which was filled with lessons that you could not foresee.
Yes.
Because
you
didn't know how important it was to be an accountant and structure. You know, there's a structure of a home, but then there's a structure of a business and how you get things done and make sure. And there's a structure to your time, and there's materials, and then you have employees, and it's not just this, you know, fun thing. Right, you don't just say, I painted a picture and someone buy it. You know, it's like, okay, this is a business now.
Exactly. And although I knew HR and marketing, I didn't know marketing enough, because I always had a target. So I didn't know that you have to formulate your target market. If you would have asked me what my target market is, I would have said homeowners. You know, and that would have made sense to me. Anyone who wants to design their home, duh. But that's not true.
So,
you know,
so
I don't want a homeowner who doesn't
then.
Want. Huh?
Right. So let's talk about that. So that was my other question. Who was your target market when you started out?
It was everybody. I had no clue.
Good.
It
now
was
that's
anybody.
That's the perfect answer. Right. Anyone who had a home or maybe even an a condo, a home, apartment, you know, they wanted interior design. That's
yep.
everyone, basically, right?
Yep.
Except for the homeless guy living out of that cardboard box made for a washing machine. So I get that. That wasn't your target market, but everyone else
yep.
in a home was.
Yep.
So how did you learn, this is good for entrepreneurs, how did you learn that that was an inefficient way to look at your target market?
So I actually went through several coaches and I took some online classes because I really had to, I'm all about classes. I'm all about learning. Obviously I have, you know, associates, bachelor's, master's degrees, you know, so I'm all about classes and I think they're useful. So I went online and I took some classes, you know, who seemed the most authentic? Who did I want to connect with? So in the interior design world, Nancy Ganzikaufer, Salima Mamdani, Bobby Tsui, you know, all of these people were so helpful to me in identifying what do I want? Where's my target market? They had me do exercises. They had me think through, like, my good clients that I had, my connections.
Right.
So, it wasn't easy. It took years. You know, I had to find out who I was first. I had to integrate, you know,
right.
how does my wellness
right.
fit into my design business? Are they separate? Are they not? You know, and over the years, like, I had integrated them. We used to call me the therapist for your home. But I didn't understand
okay.
why I had that. Where was that? Where did that come from?
Right, right.
How was that going to work?
Yes.
Some
things can be just a good idea. Something
right.
can be a really good idea, which maybe it's not something you really stand for. It's just, you know, a nice thing to say.
Right. And then, you know, and then I wrote a book with my, you know, one of the women that I shared an office with, and we called it Feng Shuat. And at the time, nobody knew what feng shui was, and nobody knew how to pronounce it. Feng shui. Yeah, we're doing feng shui over here. So we called it feng shuat. And it's like, what is that? How do you pronounce it? You know, what does it mean? And it was really the basic principles of good design. You know, you don't have your desk
okay.
with your back to the door. Why? Because you don't know who's walking in behind you.
Right.
You know, it's not good feng shui or feng shui. You know, how do you pick your favorite colors? We had questions and answers so people could figure it out for themselves. And then I got fortunate because I write. So I wrote for doityourself.com and I wrote a blog and I kind of figured out, like, hey, you know, we have a little course on do it yourself. So I kind of figured out my target market through the years. And I understood after taking classes what a target market is. And I think when you're starting a business, that's huge.
Exactly. So then I'd like you to answer two questions. I guess I'm asking you to distinguish these two, that it's not semantics. Who are you and who is your business? And I guess the third one would be target market now.
So my target market is someone who actually wants to make their home or their office a sanctuary, who wants it to function properly or function and flow to enhance the business or enhance their life. And so that would be my target market. And who am I?
Wait. So this is, you started out with just residential, correct?
No. Well, yes. Well, my first clients were both. I would do their home and
commercial,
their
meaning
so,
business.
Yeah.
So you've done
split.
All. Okay. Okay.
It is a split. Yeah, we do commercial office spaces and we do residential.
And that's what I wanted to get at. So
mm-hmm.
But do you have a greater focus on resident, on commercial, meaning office spaces, than you did in the past?
No. I don't think it's changed. I want to, you know, with COVID, a lot of people aren't in the office. We're doing home offices.
Right.
So it kind of dictates, I guess, the economy and what's going on in the world.
Well, but pre-COVID, before COVID, were you doing, did you have more of a focus on commercial or not really?
No, we've been 50-50 throughout.
Okay. All right, good. Okay. And so your business, who is your business? So if you are, and I'm sorry, can you repeat that again? So your target market is people who?
Who understand the value of making their spaces functional and who want, you know, who want to have a space that when they walk in, they have that feeling of I'm home. I can kick my hat off. I can kick my shoes off. I can breathe a sigh of relaxation. It's a respite. And that doesn't necessarily mean just your home. We do therapy offices. We want you to go into that office and feel like I can vent here. I can feel safe here. We do financial offices. We want you to know that when you walk in, this is the place that you trust. This is the place you feel comfortable in.
Interesting.
Because if you're, you know, running your business, you want people to feel your value.
Right.
And we think that's huge.
That's interesting because when you talked about working at the DA's office and people having to go home where they've been raped or molested or their place has been robbed and that loss of safety, and it's like you incorporated some of your professional experiences, like you solve the problem that you saw
mm-hmm.
people having.
Yes.
Very interesting how you incorporated that.
Yes, that was
very
important to me. And it took a lot of understanding and a lot of work to figure out the formula, you know, as opposed to just walking in and making a space pretty or just making a space
right.
you know, look good. It's giving it that feeling.
Okay. And I've seen your work. So beautiful, beautiful the way you
Thank
put
you.
Designs and you coordinate them. But it's, so I'm a, I like, you're not, you're modern, except it's classy and classic. I'm distinguishing between classy and classic. It has a classic look, and it's classy and modern, and it's clean. It's not a lot of you don't put a lot of fluff in things, and I like that crisp, clean lines is what it seems you have a really good eye for, and symmetry in how things go together. So that the work I've seen, you know, I've seen some of your work in person, like in the home, and I've seen other works through pictures. So, you know, I've seen it live and up close.
Thank you. Yes. So for those of you who don't know, Ted has been my coach. One of my coaches.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
So, yes.
And your business, who is your business and working with people who want functional workspace or home space, it's safe. It gives that sort of assurance of this is the place you want to be, whether you're a client or you're getting home from work.
So I've really formulated it that we're a wellness designed business, and that's a buzzword, but it's always been that way. So we use how the house sits, how the house flows, how each room goes into each other. We use colors to make you feel good. I've always been a proponent of psychology of color. We use different lighting. Yesterday we had a panel at our High Point Market that I was on as a keynote speaker, and we talked about when I was in college, and I actually had blue and red light bulbs in my bedroom, and I would switch them out. You know, at night it would be blue, or it would be red, or it would be white, or it would be yellow,
And at the time, I really had no idea how much lighting played into these things. But now we have infrared lights that make you feel better. So, you know, we have seasonal affective disorder. And my mental health piece plays so much into that because I understand how lighting affects your mood. I understand how lighting affects what you eat. I understand how lighting affects how you sleep. So bringing those elements in, using crystals, you know, back, unfortunately, before the World Trade Center was trashed, they had a huge, huge, huge amethyst crystal in the front entry. You know, an amethyst, all crystals signify something. So I use crystals, and, you know, I don't display them in bizarre places, but they're placed accordingly. And, you know, where your bed faces, what else? Different scents. I use essential oils. So essential oils help you sleep. They help you breathe better. They get rid of mold. They get rid of toxins. So there's a whole play of wellness that are or my business. And I have people who work with me so that, you know, we, and so when I say we, it's me and my team, you know, it's not just my assistant or just, you know, the person who's filing or just the intern, it's our team because I can't function without them and the business can't run without everybody doing their part. So that's our we,
right.
You know, there's a whole belief system and wellness-based practice that goes into what we do. That took years of knowledge and studying.
And your team understands that that's who you are. You are this organization that stands for creating environments that are mentally, physically, and even spiritually healthy.
Yes.
By using colors and using certain, whether it's crystals or the configuration of your furniture that it's.
Correct.
Like I was saying, it's clean, it's clutter. You create clutter-free environments where people can flow and move.
Exactly.
And that, even if they don't know what feng shui is, there is a sort of flow
feng shui.
To the way people, right, the way their furniture and the design of everything, including colors, you've actually designed a place to make them more than at home. It's
correct.
Like some mental health aspect to it that makes home more than just home, a real,
correct.
Like I guess people call it sanctuary.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And it's funny because we, not recently, 3 or 4 years ago, we designed a living room, dining room space for one of our clients. And he called yesterday to get the name of an electrician because they were having an issue with another area. And he said, I just want to tell you that every time we walk into the house, we go, ah. And that's exactly, I mean, you know, it just makes me want to cry because that's what we do. We want you to walk in and go, ah. You know, where else can you find that peace of mind? So that's what the business does.
And so who is Lori?
So Lori is definitely the creative. You know, challenges for me are accounting. Challenges for me is process. You know, I can focus and I can multitask, but I see things differently, and I look at things differently. And it kind of, people sometimes look at me and their head like tilts to, and they're like, what? You know, and things are categorized in my head. So, and I think that's part of that creative process. If I, you know, and we make mood boards. It's very interesting. We make, and I liken it to this. So when we make a mood board, you have, you know, a rug on the board, and thanks to HGTV, we all know what a mood board is. So you have a rug, and then you have a light, and then you have a table, and you have a chair, and you have a paint color, and that's kind of how my brain thinks. So as I'm seeing it in my head, it's almost like a vision board across my head. I go, okay, I see this, I see this, I see this, I see this, I chalk it up. And then somehow I have to put it into a cohesive picture. And that's really who I am. There's different components and different compartments. And I, you know, I've learned that I have a sense of humor and I'm kind of quirky, you know, kind of grounded, but kind of not. And I'll walk out and I'll leave my keys in the car and the car is running and so be it. Is it the worst thing in the world? No, so what? I'll leave my handbag in a restaurant in Manhattan. Okay, so what?
so that's
kind of who I am. Playful and fun.
My uncle would say, don't sweat the small stuff. Come on.
Right. Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And working where I work, I understand that that's not the most important thing in the world anymore.
So it sounds like you've taken quite a journey. What are the valuable lessons, and you may have answered this question, but what are the valuable lessons you learned as an entrepreneur that you think would help anyone who's looking to take that leap or has and maybe hasn't seen all that you've seen?
So, you know, business is important. And it's ironic to me that they teach all of these things in school and they never teach people what business is. And I think businesses, even, you know, to learn how to run a business, I think is one of the most important things, because the basic principles are how to run your life. So there's processes, there's getting yourself out there, there's knowing how to talk to people, there's common courtesies, there's valuing yourself, valuing your time, and learning how to set those boundaries. Even if you're working in another company, you know, it's knowing how to talk to your boss or how to talk to your coworkers, how to function as a team, how to be a leader in your team, you know, how to do accounting, how to account for other people's time, how to be respectful. Those are all huge aspects of businesses. Artists don't learn that. They're like, yeah, you can have my painting. It's beautiful. Put it on your wall. But what, they're going to paint while they're homeless? That's not a reality.
Right.
You know, their art has to be valued. Of course, you know, there are artists who make, you know, $10 million a painting, but those are so few and far between, and that's because they've learned how to command that respect for their art. So, social workers too.
What you just said ties into something you said about valuing your own time. It sounds like that was a lesson also. So as an entrepreneur, I think, you know, if you're an artist, you're saying people don't always, the artist doesn't always put a value on their own time. So it may have taken 20 hours to paint something, or, you know,
right,
80 hours to do a sculpture, right? And they just sell it, you know, they may be just happy to get something for it. And,
right,
and so here you are as an entrepreneur who's still an artist, but you have, you know, a different education for artistry in someone's home or office. And
right,
it sounds like that was a lesson also. So, you know, you're not just the entrepreneur who shows up and does your job and, you know, you get a pat on the back and an invoice. Your time, it sounds like that was a lesson in learning, an artist learning how to value their time for the value that they provided to the knowledge that you possess and how that knowledge supports your clients to accomplish something they couldn't have done without your knowledge. Is that too long?
Correct.
You get what I'm saying? Okay.
I do.
So,
and yes, it is a huge thing.
Right. Yeah. Tell us about that. What was that lesson?
So as a social worker, we're taught to help people, and we're also taught not to be valued. So, I mean, for a salary of, what, $30 an hour with a master's degree, that's like unheard of in any other field. You know, you're making, if you're making $60,000, $70,000 as a social worker, you're making a lot of money. Teachers get paid 100 and something. Psychologists get paid 100 and something. Social workers, therapists, very rarely, unless they have their own practice and they're commanding it. But even insurance companies only pay $67 for your time. So per session, you know, so, you know, you're always volunteering, you're helping, you're doing good, you're whatever. So to make a transition as a business owner, and it's very easy for people not to value what you do. They think it's easy. And I see it. I'm in a lot of the Facebook groups for interior designers, and I see it all the time. You know, oh, my friend just asked me if I could pick a paint color. It's not that easy, folks. You know, it changes in every light. It, for every house, it's the same color, looks different. So, you know, it's an education. It's a process. You have to look at it in three different, you know, morning, noon, and night. You have to look at it on each wall. So, you know, people just say, oh, pick a color for me. You know, I get text messages. Oh, does this fabric go with that fabric? Because I'm changing the upholstery on my chair. Are you kidding me? You know, like, so... I think, you know, and as a social worker, it's like, oh, of course I want to help you, you know, but you can't. You have to be, people don't value you or don't value free advice ever. And if they're paying for it, they value it much more.
So that was so a lesson to learn as an entrepreneur.
Huge lesson.
Interesting. And, what impact did that have on your business once you actually learned that?
Once I actually learned that, I think I stopped wasting time and started making more money.
Okay. And you said something also, there are artists who do understand that and they command higher prices. People put a greater value on their artwork.
And I think, you know, it's funny, one of our guests that we've had, Stephen Calipe, he's always valued his worth. So he's been able to transition through three different careers, and he commands what he's asking for. And he lets you know his value. You know, and he went from real estate to something else to now he's an artist. And his art is beautiful, but he knows what it's worth. He just sold a painting for $5,000.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you know, you have to know your value.
Any final words of wisdom for the listeners?
You know, I would say find a mentor in your field. It's definitely worth getting a business coach. And really take note, know what marketing is, take a couple of online classes, and find your value, and then go out, go forth, and conquer.
So part of what you're saying is, one, invest in yourself, right? In your, and invest not just in anything, like specific development that will support that. And it sounds like also you had to go through a part of your investment, I would say, in time and effort was a kind of an inventory of yourself and how you and your business connect to your clients. Like that was a journey.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, it's not so obvious. Like, it's just like in your face, well, this is who I am. Am I bit, like, there are some sometimes inconspicuous aspects of yourself that could be very important, and most people don't accentuate those because they don't realize how much value they can be to the consumer. And you sort of pulled that out, and now you you know, creating spaces that are mental health, and, you know, working in areas in the world and seeing where people didn't have safe to go home to. It's like that was that's a problem, and you work to solve that for people, even if they didn't. Those people, I assume you were not doing interior design at Rikers Island, right, in the jail cell. So
no, I did try though, but they didn't let me.
Even if people are not coming out of, you know, prison, out of Rikers Island, they may be a corporate lawyer or an entrepreneur for themselves. It's creating an environment. And if you're doing their home and their office, you're creating two different environments that sort of solve the same sense, that it's a place of comfort and you want to be in and feel safe and comfortable, and the colors in the design and lighting all support that.
Right. Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very true. So, and hopefully, you know, with our podcast, people really get the information that they need, and we can help them in a direction to keep them successful, or to, you know, help them start off successful and not have to learn the lessons that I did or other, you know, beginning entrepreneurs did. And sometimes you have to learn those lessons to get forward, to move forward.
So if someone wants to get in contact with you for your interior design work, how would they do that?
So my website is Long Island Designer with two D's, or LGC Interiors or LGC Interior Design. So I'm kind of all over. And Lori Miller, Interior Designer, I should pop up for New York. But yeah, LGC Interior Design is what we go by.
Okay. And do you do any work still in the mental health arena?
I do. I still do some clients. I volunteered my services at the start of COVID. I knew that it was a challenging time, that people were going to be locked in, and I thought it was really important for people to have an ear.
Okay. And if someone wanted that service, they could still find you through your website that you just gave.
Correct. Yep, they can still reach out to me.
Perfect. Okay. Anything else? We're coming to a close.
Thank you, everyone. And hopefully I answered some questions and, you know, help people along the way. And Ted,
I think you answered a really big question with interior design. You talk about interior decorators. I think you made the distinction between the two.
I did.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, and I think most people don't fully know that. I had no idea that there was a distinction. So, yeah.
Yeah, there is definitely a distinction.
So I want to thank everyone for tuning in with us, and about 2 weeks ago, Lori interviewed me, and tonight was Lori's turn for you all to really get to know her. So I appreciate everyone for listening, and as always, we come to you live on Thursdays at 7 p.m., so we look forward to it again, and Lori is going to sign out for us.
Yes, thank you, everybody. Signing off, and we'll see you next week. We have some extra special guests coming up, and it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully, you're getting some valuable information from us. Have
Perfect.
A great night, and
thank
have a
you,
great
everyone.
Week. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Good night.